For October the 12th, 2018, we talk about Middle-Earth Shadow of War, the Strange Telltale Saga, and we do a free play multiplayer. Welcome to Level 260. My name is Cole Ross.
My name's David Meismith.
And I'm Jala Prendez.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Thank you so much for joining me, David and Jala.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
What's really funny is that once we stated that this combination was the rarest combination, it's happened with some degree of frequency.
it has. Yeah. Ben had to back out at the last minute. He's fine. But yeah, no, we're catching up. Yeah. I don't know what to like what to do with the banter aside from,
I have some shit to talk about.
You do. Could kind of lead with something though. Cause I want people
totally
to hear something.
Do.
Yeah.
Yes, please.
Hey everybody, fucking vote.
Yes,
if you're in America, please vote. I'm not going to tell you which way to vote. Just do it.
Just go,
and it's super easy. You can look up who you're voting for ahead of time. Chances are you're registered. Please go do that. If you live elsewhere and you have the ability to vote, do that there too. I think that participation is a net positive in a lot of ways. But
and
here
you have your choice of two parties that don't care about you.
That is a particularly American malady. I just want people to do that. So that is my soapbox. Please do that. And that is my banter.
Both parties don't care about you, but one cares about you much, much less.
Yeah.
We'll let you decide which one that is.
Yeah. So that's my soapbox. How about you, Jala?
Well, see, the only reason why I was going to interject is like, oh, well, you don't have anything to talk about for banter. I always have some shit to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I did my taco brewery run yesterday. So
I
have photos and videos on my social medias about stuff. It was
I didn't
whole
know
bunch
you could
fun.
Brew tacos.
You totally can brew tacos. Yeah, it's pretty great. But anyway, we went on our taco and brewery ruck around the Heights, and it was really neat. And at one of the breweries, there was an axe throwing thing, so like half of us ended up trying it out. Not everybody had time to mess with it, and so like not everybody did. I didn't bother with it because I was like, one of the guys after he did it is one of the guys that I train with kind of regularly, and he's like, I'm going to set one up in my backyard. And I'm like, well, dude, when you do, I'll come over and you can tell me everything you know and I'll learn all about it. You know, like, I'm not going to pay some money to this fool over here to have everybody in this group heckle me over like whether or not I can throw the fucking axe. So like,
yeah,
you know, although I'm pretty sure I could do it. But anyway, that's not the point.
I feel like in what scenario is it a good idea to heckle someone throwing an axe?
Well, see, this is like, in what scenario is it? So does it sound like a great idea to go wandering around town with all this weight on your back to go do? Okay, so anyway,
I've got a couple of logistical questions. What size axe are you throwing?
Well, you can go look at the videos which I have on my various social media. It's a little throwing
extra large.
Hatchet. It's a hatchet.
Okay.
R. David. Anyway, So also another thing is I met a guy named Patrick who, for anybody who actually pays attention to rucking, I know there's like two of you that listen to this. Patrick recently competed in the Go Ruck selection. If you don't know what that is, Google the Go Ruck selection. It's fucking crazy. Selection is a super difficult 48-hour event that was live streamed actually fairly recently. The minimum weight in your ruck, I think, was 45 pounds, and you had like 12 cadre beating you down the entire time. And Patrick is in my ruck club, and he was one of the last two guys standing, and he ended up finally dropping like 3/4 of the way through, and only one guy lasted the entire way. So basically what I'm saying is that this Patrick guy is a badass.
Yeah.
So, because like for an example, the Spartan Death Race, 12 people finished that. only one guy finished Goruk's selection. So, and some of the people who did the death race entered the selection and were disqualified. So,
Well, so my understanding is it's basically it's called selection because it's more or less 2 days of, you know, more or less a recreation of special forces selection in the U.S. Except you're doing it for fun for some reason.
Yeah. See, the cadre that work with Goruk are all like special forces, Green Berets, whatever, you know. So like, yeah, that's the thing. So anyway, the thing about Patrick, though, it was funny because he came up to me and he just automatically came up to me and as if he knew who I was. And he was like, hey, you must work in Pearland. I work over there, too. And I saw your car with all the stickers on it. Now, some of you guys have already seen and people on the Internet have seen the back of my vehicle has like all of these different stickers of all the different types of things that I do, the events, the clubs I'm in. It's got like a Goruk sticker, my running group, several of the little feet magnets from the Chevron Houston Marathon and Spartan Trifecta, all this other stuff on the back of my car. So he saw that and he's like, it looks like the back of my car. So I saw your Goruk sticker and I wanted to know who you were. I want to know who rucks out this way. So, you know, like I was looking to try to figure out who you were and I recognized you because of your tattoos. So this guy must have been looking in the window real hard to see my shoulder tattoos and remember them as I was driving by on the road. So the pro tip is don't ever try to commit a crime with Patrick around because he'll see and remember all the details.
Yeah. Batman by default.
Right. Yeah. So but the thing about him that's kind of fancy is he's got this prodigious mustache. Like if you go look up Goruk selection Patrick, you will see him. He has the mustache. Hmm. So
are we talking like handlebar or
Pringles? Okay. Has he got the Pringles? Is going full Pringles?
Yeah, he's got a pretty fancy mustache. Nice. Give me a second and I will pull him up.
I'm sorry. I am now looking on Amazon for throwing axes. So,
that's becoming a really popular thing.
It is because I know other people. So that's Patrick. Right okay. There. I sent you
a little bit of Pringles going on.
Yeah. So, no. So anyway, that was the thing. He's also a Cryptea for Spartan Race. So like if you happen to do Spartan endurance events, you may actually be the one beating your butt down. So.
Wait, aren't the Crypteas like the ones that whose job is to like kill the serfs in their sleep?
No.
Aren't the Cryptids like, you know, Sasquatch, Chupacabra?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Okay, cool.
This guy is in league with those.
Epic
with
mustache.
Yeah. No, so just I've been thinking about axes anyway recently because I've got a shed, I've got a yard to take care of. You go to the hand tool section of a home improvement store, you see a lot of stuff that you want but you don't need. You know, different kinds of axes, axe heads, different kinds of hammers, machetes, blades, things like that. Like things that I want, but, you know, not exactly practical. Like it's not a snow shovel, you know?
Wait, so are we on the record of you saying that you want a machete?
I bought my brother a machete for Christmas one year. Because we only ever buy each other joke gifts. Sure. So, you know, like I buy a... For a while I got him like some I was on like a survivalist kind of tip, so like I got him like a special tool for busting open a car window or cutting cutting your seatbelt in case he goes off of a bridge or whatever, you know.
Those are really crazy. Like I want to figure out the physics of those.
Yeah, it's real neat. I actually got one for myself because I got his and I was like, oh, that It's probably paranoid to think that you're ever going to need this, but yeah.
Well, so
you're in a brewery.
Well, we were in one of the various breweries that we went to. There's lots of breweries over in that area.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I also drank more beer than I think I've drunk in like 5 years because I don't drink beer very much. But like I went and I was hanging out with a couple of my friends and my buddy Roger's like, okay, I got the first round guys. And then Gabe's like, I got the second round guys. I'm like, okay, I got the third round guys, you know, at the third place that we go to. And then Roger decided he wanted to get a fourth round. Me and Gabe didn't even want anymore. but Roger already ordered one for us. So we're like, oh hell, okay. So there was lots of stuff. So. Mm.
So I've moved from throwing axes to crossbows. So I'm sorry.
You have a thing about crossbows. You were talking about it on some episode of some shit with Gary. I don't pay attention to anything.
I could never get is there's a really neat Japanese hardware store in San Francisco.
Okay.
That it, you know, it had all, you know, legitimate hardware stuff and, you know, had all the really neat, like Japanese versions of the various woodworking tools and stuff, which was cool. But they also had an entire selection of sickles. And I don't understand, like, one, why people in general, what they're going to be doing with sickles, really, especially in the middle of San Francisco.
Now, if you have a tiny lawn and you're just trying to keep a patch of it from getting too unruly, that might be an easy way to go.
I suppose so.
Yeah, use those to cut grass and stuff.
Speaking of patches, like my buddy Roger gave me a patch when I was out there, and I was just like, I don't know how to feel about this. Like, he gave me a patch, and it says, "No pants are the best pants," and I'm like, I have never said anything to you about pants one way or the other, bro. Like, where is this coming from?
That's funny.
But he's like, it matches your rock. It's the same bright orange. You should. Okay. Thanks.
So, to be fair, yeah. though.
I mean, the patch has a point. Oh.
It's just funny. It's kind of like that left field kind of crap. Like, some of the crap you send me, David. You send me crap sometimes, and I'm like, what is this? So,
Gotta like keep you on your toes.
Oh, like Cole needs to see that one thing you sent me that one time. Carry on, talk about something for a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're going to have to narrow that one down.
Yeah, don't worry about it. I got it.
What's up to you, David?
Not too much. I've been doing, I think I mentioned, a lot of martial arts stuff. So that's been a lot of fun. We haven't gotten arrested for you know, stick fighting in the middle of a crowded park. So that's, you know, probably a plus.
That's good.
It's pretty shocking the degree to which I've determined that, you know, they talk about how you have to be like a certain age before you, like, I don't know, have a sense of like being afraid of heights or things like that. Apparently you have to be somewhat post toddler age to have any fear of swinging sticks, because we fairly routinely have like a kid, you know, toss a ball into the middle of people sparring and like immediately run into it as like sticks are flying around.
They just want to have fun, you know, like, hey, I want to be there.
I mean,
yeah.
I mean, you know, at a certain age, kids are just made of rubber, right?
That's kids science. Bounce. Kids bounce. For sure. Yeah. Now, you guys have all these, like, exciting stories. I could fix this if I truly was bothered by it. But, like, my excitement was, like, over, you know, late last week, Chris said, hey, do you want me to come over and aerate your yard? I'm like, yeah, sure. And then I watched him aerate the yard, and then he explained what yard aeration is. And then I mowed the yard because it stopped raining. Yeah.
I feel like just knowing you see knowing that? Chris, I feel like I would first have to confirm, like, how are you going to do this?
He had a thing that he drags behind his mower. It wasn't one of those, like,
I mean, it ended up all right. But I'm just saying, we both know Chris, and like the answer could have been explosives.
Well, it wasn't. I was looking up, like, you can aerate with shoes. Just have shoes with spikes on the bottom of them and just stomp around, which seems like the least efficient way to do that. Jala, explain the thing you just put in here.
Ask David. He sent it to me.
Hey, David, what the fuck?
I just sends me a link with no comment one day, and that's what's on the other end of the link. And
it's an anime lady with her boobs out, but the boobs, instead of having the usual pointy part, have sharks.
They're shark titties.
Yeah,
is what it says. And I even hate the word titties to begin with, but now they're shark titties, and I'm just like,
I remember there was a context for this.
You never explained it if there was one, bro. All I know is I'm just like, what the fuck is this? Okay. So I don't know. I get weird shit from people all the time. So I don't even, I don't know.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Well.
I stand behind
this. Pants are the best pants is real tame by comparison to that.
In comparison to shark titties. And please note the pronunciation. Titties is spelled with two D's in the middle. Double D's, if you will. Yes, it is. Yes.
Oh,
Lord. As you do. No, I think gross. I think this was in the middle of one of the, like, what is the most gratuitous possible booby lady?
I don't know. That's an ongoing thing.
Yeah.
We will never. Was that after the Xenogears? We were talking about the Xeno Chronicle, whatever the hell. There was a big rigmarole about that lady.
Yeah, movies. There's the boob golem kind of thing. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. Shin Megami Tensei has made the shark titties not look so weird anymore. it's just far for the course for the game I've been playing lately.
Yeah.
Yeah, I truly do want to ask you about this, because like I said, the more I hear about this game, the more confused I am.
Well, that's all right. We'll talk about it in the grind.
Let's let that serve as a preview for when we get to the grind. So we've got the usual kind of show for you, the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind. And why don't we get started with
the brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. It's our little news section here. Let's see. Jala, what's going on in Mega Man Land?
I just have to say, real quick, that I noticed that there's a tendency whenever there's a brief that very often, if I am on the show, I am the first one to go. I don't know if that's for a particular reason.
You're always the first person to share. So yeah, that's usually when I'm looking at the list. Yours is the first one, and that makes the most sense. So what's going on in Mega Man Land, Propane Maniacs? Yeah.
Something for adaptation decay. They're making a live action Mega Man movie. Now, this was something that was originally announced in 2015 for all those people out there who are like, but Jala, we already know about that. It was talked about. Okay, well, now there's directors that have been named. Henry Yost. I don't know how to say that last name. Yost, is it? And Ariel Schulman. And that pair have directed Catfish, Paranormal Activity 3, Viral, and Nerve. I don't know a damn thing about any of those movies, but...
Yeah, neither of those sound promising. None of those.
I don't know. I have no idea. But they're the ones who are going to be directing the Mega Man movie, and Capcom Japan has also not announced a release date for it, so there's no telling how long it's going to be in production.
Yeah.
But they dropped the news at the same, during the same week that they released Mega Man 11, which looks much like Mighty Number 9, so I'm not excited about Mega Man 11 at all. But anyway, I don't know how to feel about it. But that's a thing that we'll maybe see in 5 years.
Yeah.
So I randomly wanted to talk about this, but couldn't actually justify it. So I am using this as a semi-segue.
Okay.
For some reason, I binge-watched a Let's Play of Mega Man 11, and the plot line of that game kind of disturbs me.
There's a plot?
There's a game?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's kind of the first thing. But then, it just disturbs me that, you know, apparently the entire genesis of, Dr. Wily's evilness is that he was ran out of academia because he wanted to make robots better.
Okay.
Like faster and stuff instead of making them sapient.
Okay.
But then, you know, as soon as anything bad happens, you know, you proceed to like use his technology to fight him. So apparently it wasn't that evil to begin with.
Yeah.
And you know, you're taking the moral high ground from the guy who's literally 11 times now has had his you know, robots hijacked, but keeps making freaking flamethrower robots.
you think he would learn, yeah.
And then you get to the end, and he's like, you know, oh, luckily I was able to rebuild all of the robots because they still have a lot of work they can do. It's like, wait, you mean you were able to rebuild them luckily because you gave them, you know, sapience and the ability to feel pain, right?
Hmm.
So I don't know. Sorry, that just really bothered me.
Yeah.
That was my random random segue for the evening.
Well, it doesn't sound like they changed a whole hell of a lot insofar as a quote-unquote story goes. So
what why, I mean, Wily more... bad robots bad?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'll be curious about this. Usually directors get attached super early on. I'll be curious when they actually get casting done.
Exactly. And that's why I'm like, I don't know. They just said that there's directors, but it took them 3 years to figure out who they wanted to direct the thing. So who knows? Like I said, it might be another 5 years from now before we see anything more about it. But I don't know.
I want Bryan Cranston to play Dr. Wily.
I don't know who that is. Send me a link of somebody.
He's the main guy from Breaking Bad.
I don't watch anything.
I could see that.
The dad from Malcolm in the Middle.
I don't watch anything. Do you not hear?
I figured if I went back far enough, there would be.
No, no. That was a white person show. No. Seriously, I wasn't watching that.
That was a white person show.
I'm not kidding. See, like, I don't know who the hell that guy is. Okay. He's
okay. All right.
Why do you want him to be Wily?
But, he's really good at hamming it up. I think he would do a real good job, like, you know, screaming and yelling like, in a fun way.
Really? He looks like he's got a real serious face going on there.
No, he's super funny. He's a really good dramatic actor, but he's fucking hilarious. Hmm. Yeah. No.
Sometimes at the same time.
Yeah. I am curious as to why this is live action.
I don't know. Why did they do Battle Angel Alita as a live action with James Cameron and whatever? That's terrible Weird. Looking. It looks terrible.
Yeah.
Very terrible. And I,
Has
okay.
James Cameron ever made anything good?
Yes, yeah. The Abyss is good. Is pretty good. Terminator's really good.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. I'll give him Terminator.
Yeah.
Wait, he didn't make 3, did he?
No, I have no idea. I can't.
No, I don't think so.
I don't feel bothered to go look it up.
I don't either. Whatever. But like, yeah. So anyway, like, yeah, I don't know why they're doing it. Hopefully they're not doing like Battle Angel looks terrible. Mm-hmm. Not that you guys know Battle Angel, but it's like a manga series that I read that was probably one of the things that made me want to make comics. So, and now it's turned into a terrible live action with a CG for the main character kind of deal. And
I've got a story that I've been waiting to talk about just because it was in very fast motion, you know, kind of over the past few weeks. So the story that I'm bringing here today is that a deal has been reached to finish The Walking Dead, the final season. This is following on the back. It is following on the back of several weeks of terrible news about Telltale. Kind of back in the middle of September, they laid off most of their staff and then all of their staff, kind of seemingly out of nowhere. Obviously things were pretty dire inside. From the outside, there was not really any indication that they were having trouble outside of like the studio heads giving a couple of kind of oblique interviews talking about how they lost their way a little bit with some of their licenses, but they feel like they've got good work ahead of them. And then just boom, the entire studio is shuttered down. Without anybody getting severance, at least to the last time that I read this. So that is super shitty. And people, instead of being concerned, it is not my job to police what people are concerned about. The big concern, the big open question was, what will happen with the final season of The Walking Dead, because it was in the middle of being developed and published, you know, episodically. I think only the first two episodes were out, something like that. However, Robert Kirkman's, I believe that's his name, Kirkman's, production company for video games, Skybound, has reached a deal to like pick up the license and then finish the game somehow. I don't know how much original staff is involved in this. But they're talking about this in terms of, you know, rejoice. And it is good that there will be closure to this. Prior to this, Telltale had actually even pulled the final season, what was available of it, you know, from marketplaces, from the stores, just because, you know, they had no way of knowing what its fate was. But yeah, there's no real closure about the severance for the people who were laid off kind of with almost no notice, apparently. There have been a lot of think pieces, a lot of kind of articles, you know, tales from the inside about how bad it was there. And there is still a lawsuit open right now about federal labor laws and notices of mass layoffs and stuff like that. So big, shitty, fraught situation for roughly 300 people. But rejoice, gamers, I guess your game is going to be done. Cool. I don't know. Can you tell I'm conflicted about it?
Wait, so how does that work? Was it, I mean, because normally, you know, there's a process which usually means that the employees get screwed because, you know, this is the darkest megacorp timeline.
Yeah.
But I would think that the proceeds from this would be part of the, you know, settling their debts.
I have no idea of what the arrangements are for this. You know, like the rights and development have transferred over to Skybound. There's no, you know, like I said earlier, there's no indication of, you know, if original staff is going to be moved over to this, you know, picked up to help finish this off. I have no idea. Like the lawsuit is specifically about, you know, labor laws and notice about this kind of thing coming up, specifically at companies of a certain size.
Huh.
Yeah. Mm. I don't know. Yeah. I felt weird about bringing this too, because it's kind of a massive bummer. So we don't have to dwell on it.
So as a random side note, stepping back just a moment to, Battle Angel Alita, those mm-hmm. screenshots from the movie are horrifying.
Yes, they are.
However, they are in fact a perfect match to the manga's art.
They are, but like whenever they make a live action version of an anime or a manga series, they don't give like CG giant eyes to the characters with giant eyes. They just get a Japanese person to play the fucking character.
Yeah.
That's it.
Seems very hyper literal.
Who
is that actress? No. Is that Amanda Seyfried? She is the only person I know who looks like an anime.
I don't know. They could have just morphed whoever it was drastically. Yeah. I don't know.
That's gross.
It's pretty gross looking. Like, no, I don't want, it's kind of like looking at the hyper realistic Beavis and Butthead statues.
You know? Please don't say that.
Yeah. Those are terrible. Those are terrible,
man. So,
now that's in your mind.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so many years of therapy. Yeah. So, yeah, this shitty stuff with Telltale. Like, it's, yeah. So every few years we get one of these big labor stories from game studios, and like it is treated as a, you know, like a wake up call, like a come to Jesus, like working conditions and big video game studios are really bad. But then nothing happens, and then it just happens again.
Yep, so, it does.
I know. I mean, to play a little bit of devil's advocate, though. I do feel like, you know, programming pays really, really well. Generally speaking, like not outside of games. So I do feel like to a certain degree, like, you know, I don't know. I guess a lot of people have crappy jobs and don't have the option to, you know, just take a not crappy job.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I mean, like it's obviously there's some complications to it. I think what I take issue with, as somebody who is very much on the outside of this, so grain of salt, etc., is that video game, specifically programming and development jobs, pay less compared to other kind of programming jobs or other development work, kind of because publishers and developers and studios understand that people are willing to accept less and accept worse conditions because they are working on something they like.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, again, I was, you know, kind of playing devil's advocate. Yeah, yeah. Like, I agree, you know, especially since, you know, games, I don't know, like AAA games make a lot of money.
Yeah, they, you know. And again, 2018, worst possible timeline, et cetera, et cetera. It shouldn't be that radical to say that if the thing you're making makes a ton of money, your pay or your stability should reflect that.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing is, you know, I was actually, you know, when I was kind of, you know, transitioning, you know, figuring out where I was going to go with the programming stuff, you know, I looked at games, and for me, the biggest thing that, you know, I ultimately decided not to go into that was just, you know, I don't see any way to which you have any control over whether you make, you know, an artistically relevant game, a, you know, maybe semi-soulless but at least worthwhile AAA game, or just like shovelware loot box games.
You go where the work's available, you know, and just the like that kind of work is already itinerant to a certain degree because it's project based, oftentimes contract based. Again, this is all for understanding from the outside. Like,
sure,
you just have to, you know, roll the dice. There's not an awful lot of control over your own destiny unless you have the resources or the risk tolerance or cushion to, you know, go out on your own.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, and even then, you know, your chances of making any money at that are just astronomically small.
Yeah. Sucks, especially for a studio that is that established and, you know, whose output, you know, ups and downs aside, is really well respected, to find out that it was a fucking garbage factory.
I'd be interested to know how much, because, like, you know, within at least kind of the, you know, web development, like Silicon Valley, you know, area of programming, basically, if you've ever worked at, you know, one of the big four, you know, Microsoft, Apple, Amazon,
Google.
Oh, Google. I'm missing one.
Facebook.
Thank you. You know, any of those five of the big four, you basically can just get whatever job you want. Like, I wonder if there's any degree to which working at a studio like Telltale, you know, gives you any advantage.
I have no idea.
Don't know either. But yeah. I do know that, remember the whole ArenaNet kerfuffle that went on with the girl, Jessica, I forget her last name.
Oh, the writer who tweeted something.
Well, yeah. Yeah, and then, like, I told you guys that one of the devs that I chit-chatted with, you know, had said, well, you know, the only thing he had said publicly was, you know, he didn't shame anybody or do anything. He just said, you know, he misunderstood what Twitter, you know, what a social media outlet is, and was like, she didn't ask for, you know, criticism or something, is all he said.
Yeah.
And he got fired for that. Well, now he actually has a job with Nintendo, so.
Yeah.
Yay. So.
Good. That is good.
Yeah, he found work somewhere else, which is good because he's got some stuff going on that he needs to be able to have money to pay for. So it's good.
But. David, I am curious about this article for that is about blind video game players.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is really interesting. And to a certain degree, I'm very much not going to be able to do it justice. So this is partially just one I wanted to bring up just as a, like, you know, even with our discussion, you should, you know, read it yourself because it's really awesome. But basically discussing, apparently one of the devs for Madden, NFL, you know, as opposed to, I guess, like Madden hockey or whatever, got a message from a gamer who was blind, who was saying that the way they changed the power meter for kicking in the game basically made it impossible for him to play.
Mm-hmm.
And so he, this guy did a deep dive in, and apparently there's a forum for people who are blind gamers called audiogames.net.
Mm.
Cool.
And it's really interesting because it just kind of goes into, some of the different ways that that people who can't see, still play games. So, from what it looks like, a lot of them tend to be sports games because of the play-by-play commentary.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of a neat idea. They also mention, which I find amazing, apparently a lot of blind players can play racing games by listening to like the engine pitch and like, Doppler effects and stuff like that.
Yeah, you can hear other cars around, yeah.
Right, well, yeah, but like I crash into cars and I can see them. I don't know. And the one I find most interesting personally is that apparently some players like to play UFC, which I'm pretty sure makes them daredevil.
Nice.
So yeah, so it's just a really cool story, discussing kind of these issues. Apparently the core issue that kind of set this up is originally the, when you played the game, I guess, I've never played a football game, but I guess it has like this, the sort of, almost like the Gears of War, like quick reload system.
Mm-hmm.
And it would rumble when you were on the like best place to do the kick.
Okay.
And so that's how people would, would be able to tell.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Did they go back and change it so it was more accessible for visually impaired players?
So I don't believe it said, it doesn't say specifically about this, but it does say that this guy then created a EA accessibility portal.
Yeah.
So I, at the very least, it sounds like, that this is now going to be something that EA is going to check along the way. And, I'm assuming like make sure that they have people who are blind and other impairments during like I'm assuming beta tests and things like that. So I'm assuming that means this got fixed. It would be kind of dumb if they didn't.
Yeah, it'd be a little bit of an anticlimax.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, this shit's great. I mean, all of us are one bad day or a particular latent medical problem away from having our sight taken from us. So, yeah, this is baller.
What I was interested in, too, is like thinking about the games that are using sound to a more to a heightened degree, particularly stuff with VR and, things like Hellblade, which I have not played, but I have been told the sound design on that is phenomenal and you can really hear stuff coming before it comes up and all this other stuff. Like, I wonder how that development will go and how that experience will be for a blind player. Like, could you have it to where like the game just has enough other sensory input coming in from like a surround sound kind of fashion that they can play those kinds of games.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that's a good point. Cause I suppose for like a, adventure game or walking simulator or something like that, playing that as a blind person is basically just like being a blind person, obviously, you know, if you're blind, you walk around and talk to people and, you know, solve problems in real life without being able to see. So I suppose, you know, it maybe wouldn't be that much different.
Yeah. I mean, like, I've brought stories in the past, you know, particularly one person who managed to beat Oddworld's Abe's Odyssey, even though they're visually impaired, just because of the way that game is really kind of deterministic with its physics. Like, you're moving in a tile-based fashion, and everything has an associated audio cue. And a long, long time ago, brought a story, this might have been in the radio days, of, like, somebody who worked with a friend to beat The Legend of Zelda: The Ocarina of Time, even though he was visually impaired. His friend basically just, like, read from a FAQ and, like, provided minimal input to help him get through it.
I feel like, though, that would make Navi's "hey, listen" kind of passive aggressive.
Yeah. No, this is great. I had no idea about audio gamers or audio games. I'm very curious to dig into that even further.
You know, I'm sorry, that this also is, again, me more tangenting, but I feel like the ideal game for something like this would be, like, XCOM.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Mm-hmm.
And then, too, like, it also reminds me of the story that Dennis brought a while ago of Skyrim on Alexa, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Like, the audio, 100% audio games, so.
Yeah. Accessibility. Fuck yeah.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. However, this time it is a free play multiplayer. Jala, thank you for posting this, where you ask us a question and then we answer it. So I will get us started with Ollie. I did not intend for this to be a segue, but here we go. In the wake of the Telltale saga, is there a games company you would be gutted to find out were acting poorly? From...
Yeah, there you go. That's a good one.
You don't hear a lot about the conditions there at From, but I would be very upset to find out that it was exploitative.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any answers from you two?
I don't have a whole lot of opinions about big game companies in general, because I don't pay attention to anything ever. I suppose EA.
Yeah, they've had trouble in the past, though.
They have. Yeah. So they've already had it sort of come to light.
I guess for me, maybe this is a little bit of a cop-out answer, but I feel like I would be more disturbed if, you know, some indie studio, you know, I found out was, you know, doing that sort of thing. Just because, you know, it seems like at that point you're all close enough to this sort of thing that, you know, you should be, you know, should have empathy.
Yeah.
David was buffering.
I just wanted to make sure because he had dropped out in the past.
Yeah,
I'll continue here. Jonathan asks, what is everyone's most anticipated game for the end of the year, as well as the first quarter of 2019?
I've got answers.
When is
Jala, what are your answers?
Well, my answers would be for the end of this year, Dark Souls on Switch, whenever the shit that comes out.
Yeah, and it just kind of flitted away, didn't it?
Yeah, it's allegedly it's coming out on the 19th of this month, so it's literally like a couple of weeks from now. Yeah. But, you know, I'm not holding my breath. So that one. And then otherwise, I would say there's this game that I saw that's supposed to be coming out, I think, next spring, called The Liar Princess and the Blind Prince for Nintendo Switch also. And that looks pretty interesting. It looks weird, so it looks like it's going to be my thing. So... you should take a look at it. It's cool.
Yeah.
Check out that art.
How about you, David?
So when is Cyberpunk coming out? Because that's probably the main game I'm super looking forward to right now.
Not for a very long time.
I don't think so. I'm increased. Fallout 76 just looks like everything I don't want from a Fallout game. And what's its Shadows Die Twice or whatever looks like everything I don't want from a From game. So
yeah, you know, Sekiro. Yeah.
And those are kind of like the, you know, the main, I don't know, the only things I really follow.
Yeah. The answer for 2019 is super easy for me. The Resident Evil 2 remake. It's coming out in February, yeah, so that technically meets it.
What is it coming on? Like, what systems?
I'm not sure. I know PS4 at least. I think everything that 7 came out on. Yeah.
Well, that means it won't be on my Switch, which is upsetting.
Yeah, that'll be a problem. I don't even know if 7 is out on Switch. I know they've talked about it, but for me in 2018, I would say it is a toss up between Call of Cthulhu or the Sunken City. Or the Sinking City,
actually,
rather.
Call of Cthulhu. I forgot about that one. So yeah, that, I guess, would be mine.
Yeah,
it's coming out at the end of this month.
I forget.
Yeah, I've been on Blackout, so I have no idea if it even looks good. I just know that it's going to be really good. For me, anyway.
Well, see, like, I always latch on to some random small thing, though. Like, you know, I almost never go for the big name titles. So, you know, I say that, but then one of them's Dark Souls, but whatever. It's a remaster of an old game.
It's a 7-year-old game. Like,
yeah, but see, look at the artwork for this Liar Princess and the Blind Prince. It looks very cute.
Mm-hmm.
And it's already out in Japan. It's just not being ported over here until later. But it looks very cute, storybook, hand-drawn art. Very cute style. So
it's real neat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Jack writes, is there a real world culture that you feel is not represented well or at all in video game medium that you'd really like to see explored?
Anything from South America. You don't see it very often. I mean, the only thing I can think of is like Abyss Odyssey that was made by a Chilean developer, you know,
Pop OEO as well. Although that might be a Portuguese developer and I'm mixing that up with Brazil.
Yeah.
Although I think Pop OEO play part of that is you're in a favela. I'll stop talking because I don't know anything. South America was what I was going to go with as well.
Well, you could also go Papua New Guinea. There's an area that nobody ever talks about.
Yeah, yeah. my go-to answer, and this lines up with what like when people have asked, like, what would you like to see like Assassin's Creed do? Back when I was really invested in Assassin's Creed stuff, Russia, specifically like Tsarist Russia. You know, prior, prior to, you know, the revolution, just that is interesting and aesthetically pleasing to me in a way that, just, you don't really see, like, most of the time you get that in indie, like specifically horror stuff, like, you know, Pathologic was a bit of a, something that reawakened that in me. So yeah, that'll be my answer. How about you, David?
So I'm going to go through a couple, sort of, I think for me, it would definitely be, Indonesia. You know, similarly with Assassin's Creed, I think you could do a really cool, 1950s, War of Independence, type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or alternately, you know, there were just a ton of really interesting, you know, empires, that most people don't, you know about that, you know, stretched, you know, at various times, you know, Indonesia, the Philippines, Thailand, Malaysia, like all over that area.
There's a horror game called Dread Out that is kind of a, you know, they adapted some of like the Fatal Frame kind of stuff, but that is based around Indonesian myth and ghosts.
That would be interesting because like Indonesia, so it's sort of weird, like a lot of tradition, you know, I do Indonesian martial arts, and traditionally there was a lot of, you know, carryover between that and like magic, stuff like that. So I've, you know, been exposed just a little bit, and there's some really crazy stuff with like Indonesia's, you know, mythology and folklore and stuff like that. So that's actually, I might check that out, even though that's usually not my genre, but
it's also not a very good game. But just
what?
It's also not a very good game, but
oh well, that's too bad.
Yeah,
you can watch a let's play on
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
Sure. So two others, just kind of minor things. Something that always struck me as weird is I don't think I've ever seen a like in any Western media, a like war game or action or something like that, that had a Indian character, which just always struck me as weird.
This is a strange question. Indian as in Native American or Indian as in South Asian? Yeah, so subcontinent. Okay.
Yeah. Especially since like India was really influential in like World War II.
Yeah.
And then the other one, just as kind of a weird thing, even though this isn't exactly under that uncommon, one that I think is kind of underrated as a setting is Seoul.
Seoul is in South Korea?
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
Like, just, it seems like every game is set in either, like, every game that kind of is doing that thing. So, like, a lot of cyberpunk games and, those sorts of things. It's always Tokyo or, Hong Kong or something like that.
Yeah.
I think Seoul would make a really good setting for either, like, near future or like a modern day, like crime or, a setting like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, all those are good, man. It sucks that just like everything is fucking America or Japan. We've talked about this in the past, but like, get some diversity up in this piece, man. There are interesting stories to tell elsewhere.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry. I want to do one more. I think maybe they did this, but a Assassin's Creed game where you play as a Sikh, I forget what they're called, but like one of the Sikh warriors, like just really cool culture, really cool fighting style.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But wait, how do you tell who's an assassin if everybody has a knife?
Good point.
I hope that wasn't insensitive.
That's okay.
Sikhism
I already said my thing earlier that sounded insensitive or whatever.
But so. Sikhism is generally awesome, and that is one of the main things that I know is that they carry knives. It's really cool. Okay, let's see here. We already asked this. So Adam asks, favorite Final Fantasy and favorite party? Pizza party, my friend. No. This is a hard one for me. I'm going to give my stock standard answer and say 12. Favorite party, and that would probably be Balthier, Ash, and Fran. But, everybody can be anything, so it's really just who you like having around. How about you two? I might be the only person on the show who likes Final Fantasy games.
I've played some of the Final Fantasies. I have not played every Final Fantasy game. So my answer is 10 just because of when I played that game. And then just like I ended up role playing out the game and stuff like that as well. Just like free play role playing back and forth, writing a story with somebody. I had a little bit deeper investment in that one.
Yeah.
Because like I was playing 7, and then I think I told this story before. I didn't have it on PlayStation. I had it on my PC, and then my PC crashed or something and took the game save with it, and I about flipped a table. I was most of the way through the game, and then like it died, and all my save data was gone, and I was just not gonna play that again.
Yeah.
So I never did finish that one. 10, and I would say Riku and Oran because those are my two favorites, and then I don't know. Whoever, I don't care after that. I usually Lulu.
Yeah, Lulu is my go-to.
Yeah, and then I guess Tidus is like default, so
no.
Whatever. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I've never been super into Final Fantasy. I'd probably say either A, semi-cheat and say Tactics Advance, because that's the only one I really played much of. I also really liked 6, and I know Locke was my favorite character. I'm not sure that I had a favorite party beyond him.
Yeah, well, he was your main character for a while until
yeah
Terra and Zells and all that. 6 is interesting. 6 would be my runner-up.
Yeah, 6 is good.
Yeah. Mike,
you were into, wait, was it 4 with the Dark Knight?
Yeah, 4 is really good. I think the 6 is a better game.
Sure.
Yeah. Mike writes, you can only play the games of one developer for the rest of your life. Which dev do you choose?
I don't pay attention enough to devs to know what to tell you, bro. Because, like, the problem is I like a variety of games. Somebody recommend a dev that actually does a variety of different things.
I don't know.
See, because, like, with my style,
yeah,
we got to get some variety up in there.
My answer would be Zachtronics. They are incredibly intricate games that have a lot of depth. A lot of room for optimization. There is variety in that. However, I generally don't have the patience for them because they demand a lot of you. If that was the only game I could play, you know, I would actually be invested in learning to rise to them. And I think that'd be really rewarding. Things like Infinite Factory or TRS 100 or what have you. Zachtronics.
See, here's the problem, because back in the day I might have said Capcom or Konami, but that was a while ago.
Yeah. You
know? Like, I don't know that I would say that now.
Yeah.
Sorry, David.
See, I feel like for me, Zachtronics is kind of a victim of their own success in that, you know, I really like programming and, you know, putting things together and building things and stuff like that. So I really want to try all of those games, but like almost all of their games are pretty critically acclaimed. So wherever I go to Steam to get one, I can't decide which.
Oh yeah, that's just pick one. It, you know, they've got a few different flavors, different stuff. It's pretty hard to go wrong from my understanding. Yeah. How about you, David?
Yeah. So I think for me, probably the safest answer would be Blizzard, just because they're a studio that makes almost uniformly decent to good games and, makes a variety. I feel like the studio that most bullseyes what I want from games would probably be Ubisoft, but they just vary so widely in their, quality. So.
Yeah.
I can see that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, with Blizzard, you give yourself the multiplayer escape hatch. Those are close to being perpetual.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Yep. Lindsay writes, what game has your favorite wall meat in it? No garbage meat, because that's just nasty.
I have no idea what?
Well, see, in a long time ago, in this game on Sega CD called Vi, that game at the very, very end had like a wall meat dungeon, but it had like all these human faces with arms and stuff, like all merged into the walls, writhing in the background, screaming and stuff the entire time, like you're in the dungeon and doing all your fights and everything. And that was the first time I had come across like some serious wall meat, so like that was probably the most striking instance.
Yeah.
Not that anybody listening to this has played that game. I was like the only person who had a Sega CD.
Yeah.
But you know, like
in
that's
the world,
okay.
Yes.
The other answer I would say would be the meat floor from Corpse Party Blood Drive. Remember how I showed you guys there was that mouth and I got on top of it and then like a phantom popped out from in there and came after me and like it actually got me, because you can actually see it in the floor if you're paying attention, but I didn't pay attention and then it like popped out and got me. I was like, oh, that was actually pretty good on you, Corpse Party. So
yeah,
that was my second favorite answer.
Yeah, so I think the definition of wall meat that Lindsay is getting at, although I like your interpretation of it too, because there are plenty of womb levels, you know, that I think is what TV Tropes calls them. I think maybe talking about like in Castlevania when you find the meat in the wall. Yeah. And I'm going to have to be basic and just say Castlevania is really up there for wall meat.
Well, yeah, like I don't even know of any other instances of wall meat places where you just get food.
I think Lindsay just wanted us to talk about Castlevania.
Yeah,
I know Dead Cells is noteworthy in that you can actually go into the options and set the wall meat to either like carnivore, vegan, Castlevania, or one other.
Nice.
That's nice. I like it.
Yeah.
So what happens if it's okay? Never mind. That's fine. I'll just
if it's vegan, it's like fruit and vegetables that pop out.
But that's not protein. They didn't do it right. You gotta have some lentils or some shit coming out of the wall.
Put some couscous up in that wall.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm upset.
Okay. Greg writes, if you could only play games of one console or system, what would it be and why? I'm going to make an amendment to this just so it can be a discussion and we don't all pick the same one. Assume that PC is not on the table.
I wasn't even going to pick PC because he said console.
Yes. So I just know that if I was looking at this and trying to lawyer it, if, you know, if I was on your guys' side, I would say PC, end of question. But I want to, I want to give it a little bit. So you have a quick answer for this. What system?
I have a quick answer. When did I have a quick answer? Did I say I had?
You
a
said
quick
your
answer?
You said your answer wouldn't have been PC.
Oh well, yeah, it wouldn't have been PC. I was thinking more like something like SNES or maybe even the Game Boy Advance.
Yeah.
So
if we are talking specifically about the games that can run on that system, it would be a toss up between Vita or the DS.
Yeah, Vita is a good answer too.
Yeah. I'll be ambivalent about that. I know that goes against the spirit of the question because I'm talking about backward compatibility or marketplaces or stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, you are. You're cheating. You're cheating, bro.
See, I outlawed PC just so I could give myself cover for that. Make it seem like I'm not gaming it. How about you, David?
Yeah, that's really tough because I mean, if I was answering this as like, what is my, you know, kind of halcyon era of game, it would definitely be N64, but I haven't tried this, but I really doubt that those games aged all that well.
They did not.
Yeah.
Also, there were not that many of them.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah. It's kind of like, you know, I wouldn't answer Sega CD or Saturn because there's not a lot on those.
Yeah. Yeah, you want to give yourself some wiggle room.
So I think I would probably go with, you know, go with like the Nintendo DS if I, you know, was allowed, to, you know, kind of cheat.
Like even if you filled the Game Boy Advance slot of that system with epoxy resin or whatever, you still have a ton of really great games on the DS.
Yeah, I'd have to see, like, I'm trying to think, for me, the, you know, the biggest games I play, you know, I played just an incredible amount of you know, Game Boy stuff, you know, until I was, you know, like junior or senior year of high school, that was almost all the gaming I did.
Uh-huh.
And it was generally either Pokemon, which was usually advanced, Castlevania, which was kind of spread across it, or Harvest Moon.
Mm-hmm.
So, probably DS as opposed to advanced, although it would be close.
A lot of those games also have versions that are on the DS. Like there are lots of more Castlevania games of that kind on the DS, more Pokemon games with more quality of life improvements on the DS. Yeah, I would say. Jala, disagree with us.
About why I said that I would do the Game Boy Advance.
Oh, did you say Game Boy Advance?
Yes, I did.
Oh, I'm sorry. that got lost. Man, I feel bad. So Game Boy Advance. Yes, that also would be good. I think I blipped out there.
Since Ben isn't here, could we say board games as a platform?
I think so, yeah.
For him. We're answering for him since he's not here.
But I think it would have to be down to one thing. Like, he could only play games that were pop-o-matic. Okay. You know, like at the beginning of Trouble. Or the center of Trouble.
Yeah.
See, I feel like then you could probably even go with, like, you know, pick an edition of D&D and probably be fine.
Yeah. Second, obvs. let's see. Man, I feel bad that I didn't hear you say GBA, Joel. I'm sorry.
All right, I said the thing. Yeah. But I also said, I said SNES or Game Boy Advance, so you probably latched on to the SNES part. Although, SNES. Like, I got an SNES way late in the game, so that's kind of a cheating answer because I didn't play most of what's on that system, so like, if I could only play stuff on that system for the rest of my life, it'd be like discovering new shit.
It's good breath. Yeah. Let's see. So I think we have time for just one more. Let's do OMG Amoose, continue down here. In this era of X classic mini consoles, is there a classic console that hasn't been announced that you'd like to see released? Also, where are the classic portables? Shrug emoji or shrug series of characters. We've gotten a lot of them. I would love to see a competent Genesis one, you know, one that wasn't like decent. Shipped out.
Yeah, I agree with that. Because Genesis was, it wasn't my first system. My first system was an Atari, and then I had an NES. However, like, my main system for a long time was a Genesis, so.
Yeah. If you're going back to my childhood, then yeah, Genesis. I'm sure there's an argument to be made for, you know, N64 Classic, which is absolutely in the works. But yeah, Genesis. I know it's been done. I just would like to see it done well.
Yeah, yeah. Same here.
David?
Yeah, so I feel like... If I was going with, you know, straight up the spirit of it, I'd have to go with, you know, N64. However, I do want to throw out just two kind of hypotheticals. One, if I could get a system that was just like every arcade light gun game.
Oh, dang.
That would be pretty awesome. And then the other one I'd say would be... it'd be really interesting to just kind of consider what would it look like if you did a PC one, but like, you know, from like a, you know, a fairly identifiable era.
Oh, like a literal DOS box.
Yeah. Or yeah. Like either something like that. And then all the games that were emblematic or like even doing like, hey, like the heyday or one of the heydays of like point and click adventure or, you know, something like that. Like, I feel like that could be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Heck, if someone would make a NetHack box that I could actually remember the controls to.
I think what you're looking for is a keyboard overlay.
That could be.
Yeah.
That could be.
Yep. The PC one would be really cool, just because, you know, to have like a piece of sculpture that is a PC kind of thing, because like, honestly, all this stuff, you want the mini console version because you want the actual physical thing. Like I've got my NES mini and SNES mini sitting on a shelf next to my entertainment center to be plugged in, you know?
I'd be really interested. I, you know, have no concept whatsoever, about what the games were actually like, but I would be really interested. What is it that like La Mulana is supposed to be imitating?
I have no idea. Probably some kind of 8-bit computer.
Yeah, but you know what I mean. There's like, my understanding is there's, you know, some specific like early, you know, like equivalent of like a Commodore 64 or something that's supposed to be, that is apparently there's this, you know, huge, you know, culture of that I have no touch point on, but that'd be interesting.
Yeah. Like a PC 98 or like any kind of 8-bit microcomputer. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Good questions. Good questions. Well, thank you, Jala, for putting this up. Thank you, everybody, for posing them to us. I will take the remainder and scroll them away in the spreadsheet for later on. If you want to participate in multiplayer, be it free play or the regular kind, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. Watch for those to go up on Monday afternoons.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. All of us were here last time.
David, go first.
David, go first.
I have just been playing Shadow of Mordor. So, okay.
Wait, Shadow of Mordor or Shadow of War?
Shadow of War, yeah. It's, you know, differentiating them would imply that there was plot. I don't know. You know, overall... You know, as we actually had a really, really neat discussion on the Slack, the game continues to be creepy, but the moment-to-moment gameplay is fun. I've decided that my headcanon is just going to be, you know, that, I don't know, somehow I hired these orcs or something, because it's a lot more fun when you're, you know, actually building the jolly army that it appears to be, as opposed to it being like, you know, you horribly enslaving people.
Yeah, that's fucked up.
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of weird, but so I'm trying to think overall from a gameplay perspective. I've been doing some of the castle sieges where you just, you know, have to you know, undermine a, you know, the enemy's defenses by taking out their leaders, and then, you know, do a fairly simple point defense, you know, capture type of thing, and then fight the final boss. Most notably, my favorite thing is you can just replace all of the castle's defenders with your captains, and so that they just dynamite the all of the defenses, and you can kind of just walk in and claim it, which is a lot of fun.
Cool.
Other than that, it does have one story beat that I did really, really like. You know, kind of the plot line, like I mentioned before, is your character is trapped between life and death, and so you always, you know, you always come back when you get killed. And so there's a scene where one of the ringwraiths is basically attempting to, you know, kind of possess you and, you know, force you to the dark side. And so the elf assassin who's on your side just responds by just killing you. So so that they can't do it.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, I guess that actually kind of was the logical course of action there.
Yeah. Do you think that Nazgul see Ringwraith as a slur?
Huh. I don't know. I mean, the game already has a surprising number of slurs for you.
Okay.
Yeah, there's tons of things that just random things that the orcs refer to you as, that presumably if I really geeked out about like elvish or, you know, dark tongue or whatever, would mean something to me.
It'd be less than flattering, yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
So I do have to say, though, I kind of wonder at some of the names they chose for the orcs, because while everything's randomly generated, it's not the, like, you know, MMO name generator thing where it's just like random letters. There are a finite number of names, and some of them are just laughably bad. Most notably, I recently fought Douche the Cannibal.
Is that a command? Is that like a text adventure command? Examine cannibal. Douche the Cannibal. Oh, Jesus, that is fucking rich.
Yeah, yeah, so I don't know quite where they're going with that. Again, I'm assuming it's, you know, it probably is, like, legitimately has some meaning in, like, you know, one of the created languages. But still, guys, come on.
Is douche spelled the same way? Is it D-O-U?
It's D-U-S-H.
Hmm, okay. And just to reveal how much of an asshole I am, my joke about Nazgul and Ringwraith, Nazgul is literally a black speech for Ringwraith, so fuck me.
There you go.
Yeah, don't get offended at that, nerds. If you're going to correct me, you're a nerd. I'm a nerd too. We're all nerds. It's fine. There's no problem with it. Do you have any cool abilities? Like, so where do you start off in relation to the end of the first game? And, like, do they open up any cool new stuff for you to be able to do, to kind of approach these situations?
Yeah. So they, you start out, pretty much, with all of your abilities from the first game, with the exception of, the ability to, like, possess and control, orcs, and the ability to you can basically eventually get a, I think they call it shadow strike or something, where you basically shoot an arrow and like teleport to an enemy and like instantly kill them.
Nice.
They do a lot more with the, really emphasize the elemental system this time around, so you can get a lot of your abilities you can then upgrade with either fire, poison, frost, or curse.
Okay.
And you similarly, with that, you get a lot of things where you can, for example, like teleport to a campfire, cause it to explode, and then summon either out of the, you know, ashes will rise either venomous spiders or like ghouls or, you know, things like that, which is kind of cool.
Hey, Joel, is it metal?
Sure.
Okay.
We'll just go with that.
Similarly, I think one of my overall favorite abilities is you now can get armor sets that give you advantages, and one of them, all revolves around using the fire elemental, and in particular gives you a lot of advantages for being set on fire. Okay. So like, instead of it damaging you, it heals you. I haven't gotten it, but you eventually get the ability where you'll just like do a passive AoE when you're on fire, things like that.
Nice.
But it tends to really encourage the more I don't know, just kind of chaotic, just kind of troublemaking approach to the gameplay, where you'll just be, you know, running through and like point blank shooting like explosive barrels of grog and things like that. So yeah, you get a lot of ability as you go along to just kind of cause chaos and capitalize on that, which is really nice.
Nice.
So,
do you think you're gonna see this one through?
I don't know, because the actual definition of like what exactly that constitutes in this game is a little murky. Basically there's, three acts of story, and then the final act of which, you know, within like, as the game describes it, you know, is officially the fourth act, is kind of this extended series of progressively more difficult siege challenges.
Okay.
And I don't know if I'm going to get through all those. So what, I'm just going to have to see, like, I'm already, to a certain degree, it's a lot more fun to just cause trouble and, either build up your orcs or, you know, just take out enemy orcs than it is to actually follow the storyline. So it's kind of going to be a mix.
Yeah. Anything else?
No, I think that's really about it.
Cool. I've got one for you. I haven't played shit, so Jala.
Okay. Well,
no, well, I mean, I've just been catching up on Watch Out for Fireball stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Just, you know, not gonna burn that cast. But Jala, I'm curious to hear what you've been up to, and whether or not it involves genitalia demons.
Okay, we'll discuss this. So first I will mention that I played a little bit more, just a smidge more of Hand of Fate 2. I played through the High Priestess a couple of times and got further, but still died. I was having a really, really good run that last time, and then I had a bad roll, and I got screwed in the final battle with a bunch of extra enemies because of my roll. And so I pared them down to just a couple left, but then I didn't dodge in time, and I got killed. So that sucked ass, and I was like, I'm just going to set this down for a while. Anyway, I got to go finish Shin Megami Tensei anyway. So, yeah, we'll talk about Shin Megami Tensei next, because I'm finished, guys. I did it.
And you got it in right under the wire, too. You said last time, I'm going to finish it by the time we record. Like, you finished it like 90 minutes before we started?
So, first things first, to continue on, like... Literally in the game, they tell me you must slay the whites. Okay, game.
Yeah.
So, I sent a screenshot. The whites are some white people. Literally, they are white, all white people who tell you that you need to basically be nihilist and turn everything back to nothing, and you have to kill them.
That's really hates white people TV shows.
I guess, like, okay, now to discuss about my earlier comment, let me explain that back in the day I was living in the ghetto. You don't watch a white people show when you live in the ghetto. So that just doesn't
happen. Word gets
around,
you know?
Like, no. Like, no, you watch what other people are watching so you can fit in, because some shit. I already didn't have the right skin color, even if I was tanned. So,
yeah, because social pressure is a real thing. Like.
Yeah, and especially like if you're in a rough area. So anyway, but like I slayed all the whites, and then I had to slay Lucifer, who looks like some sort of fucking goth alien. I don't know. Like I share a link to that. That looks pretty. Like people can see that in my Twitter.
It looks like if what the Elephant Man had was contagious. Like if that was the case, and he bit powder. You know the Sean Patrick Flannery movie. That's what Lucifer looks like in this game. He's very white and lumpy.
He is very white and lumpy, and I don't even know what's going on. So, but anyway, all right. So I was on the law path. I finished the law path, and it's terrible. And you commit genocide. And you also commit genocide at the end of the chaos path. So, I mean, like, you're just kind of like, unless you can get that really hard to get neutral ending, which I'll talk about in a minute because I watched it on YouTube. Like, unless you do that, then you pretty much are a terrible person. So
do they
sorry. What?
Do you not get to actually make these decisions? They just kind of arbitrarily say, like, and then you committed genocide.
Well, your decision is, do you want to follow the law path or the chaos path? And all of your decisions up to that point mess with your alignment. And then at one point, if you try to go against what your actual alignment is, they tell you, sorry, you've done enough of the other thing that you can't do that.
Sounds like a fucking Mass Effect thing.
So, like, basically, when I was on the law path and they were like, do you want to give everything to God and become a tool of the Lord? And I'm like, no. And they're like, sorry, you've already been doing enough to make law the thing, so too bad. And I'm like, well, shit. Okay,
seems
thanks
like really
for giving
bad
me a
game
choice.
Design.
Yeah, that was terrible. So I was generally angry about the ending, and I flipped a motherfucking table. I was real mad. And like I said, I watched the chaos ending on YouTube, and it's just as bad. And then I watched the neutral ending, and dude, all it is super happy and weird. Like, you bring, like, okay, now bear in mind, I don't know what happens at the end, the whole, like, ending segment. There's, like, four or five quests before you get to the very end. All I watched was the very end. So I don't know where it all comes in, but you bring the spirits of goodwill and spite to this floating head tentacle monster thing, and it eats them, and then it blasts off into space, and everybody's all excited to hang out and join Tokyo and the Eastern Kingdom of Mikado. And that includes some of the characters who were total asshats during the game. And then some random lady at the end of the game says, thanks. And then that's the end. And I don't know what was going on exactly, but everybody seems happy and everybody is like, you know, singing and shit basically. And I'm like, what is this? And then there was also never explained in the law or chaos path This one guy, I think his name was Ken, he was a guy who was in a wheelchair who shows up randomly in a demon's domain earlier in the game, and then he healed my party, and then he shows up again like a couple of other times, and then I don't know who the hell he was or what the hell his deal was, and I never found out on the Chaos or the Law path, so I can only assume that he is explained in the neutral path.
And in that those last missions,
And that the random lady that says something to me has to do with the man in the wheelchair, I don't know. So I don't exactly know what that was all about, but I didn't like the end of the game. However, I do have to say, I have to give it some credit for one thing. You know that when a game drops some folklore, religion, or general mythos stuff, I always have to make a comment. Well, mm-hmm. The thing I'm going to talk about is the Merkaba. Now, I apologize to anybody who actually knows anything about the Kabbalah if my pronunciation is off, but the way I say the Hebrew is just how I've heard it being said. So the Merkaba is in the Kabbalah, in the Bible, actually, in general, it is God's chariot. And Ezekiel's vision of it is describing it as being made up of four angels called Hayot, or living beings, and they are driven by the likeness of man.
And when you say angels, you're referring to like the crazy wheels within wheels angels. Is that correct?
I will show you some illustrations in a second. So,
yeah, I'm pretty sure that's the one.
So the four angels have different faces, one of a man, one of a lion, one of an ox, and one of an eagle. And this is what it looks like. Here's some images of it from antiquity. Mm-hmm. So in the game itself, it's a human character that merges with the four archangels to make the character, a character that calls itself a seraph called Merkaba. So it makes that. So it's obviously not exact, but it's actually reasonably close, especially given that this is a video game that's not even about real world Jewish mysticism. So, mm-hmm. I mean, like, four angels merged with a man is kind of like four angels driven by the likeness of man. Okay, that actually pretty, like, I gotta give it some props. It's better than Corpse Party's BS and made me so mad. Like, I was so pissed about that. This is actually, like, fairly decent translation over to it. Yeah,
to describe for people, like, the image that you shared when you said, oh, it looks like this. It's like a angelic/demonic lady, looks like a Bayonetta enemy. Has a lot of has like huge antlers and spears coming out.
It also has like a mouth in the center of its body, and then and then it has a tail that turns into like a dragon mouth on the end. It is real wacky looking.
Yeah. But they needed it to be a thing that could address the player as opposed to being an agglomeration of nightmarish geometry.
Yeah, but I do have links to those things up on my Twitter as well. So if you want to see what Merkaba looks like, and also the images from antiquity, those are also up on my Twitter, as everything is. So I played that, and the only notable thing that I actually like, okay, I like the demon fusion system, the game plays well enough. I didn't like the story to the end, especially at the end. I really didn't like it because mm-hmm. they made me choose bad things, and then even the quote-unquote satisfying ending still made me mad. Like, I just was not going to be happy with the story in this game.
So what you're saying is you're already 2 hours into SMT4 Apocalypse.
Right? No. Like, that always comes later on when nobody's anticipating it. Come on. So anyway. So I finished it. So now I can move on to something else. I don't know what that something else is going to be, but I'm pretty sure it's going to be something that I'm going to flip a table about. Well, I can go on. I got one more game. And okay. I'll talk about that real quick. I also played Ao Oni 2. So, or Blue Oni, or Demon, or however you want to translate Oni. It is a free mobile game that just looked really weird. So I decided to play it. It came out in December 2016 in Japan. It came out to America at the end of February 2017. And it's essentially, from what I can tell from when I looked up information, a remaster of the original game, which was made in RPG Maker. I haven't played the first game, and it's not available in English, so I may not ever do so. Not that there's like a whole lot of dialogue or that the story is real important to the game, but, you know, general principle. I don't know. So anyway, basically this game starts out with several high school students going to a haunted school as a test of bravery to see who can last the night. And then their teacher is walking around in the middle of the night, happens to see them, and decides to go in after them to make sure that they are okay.
Hey, Jala, how is this not Corpse Party?
Yeah, I know. Right? Well, it's pretty much, but except instead of, like, you know, willing themselves, chanting some kind of random ritual they found online, these guys go in, and the moment they walk in the door, they get attacked by the Aoni, and they wake up in a jail cell underneath the school. And after they get out of the cell, the main guy goes to investigate some noise that he hears, and he finds a rat, and he goes back to the others to tell them, dudes, it's just a rat. But then only one guy is left, and everybody ran off because they saw the dude, like the Aoni, come back.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just like, fuck this, and they just run off and leave your ass. So you encounter the Aoni yourself, and you run away. And from there, you're basically trying to both find your friends and your teacher and get the hell out of the school. And the Oni shows up at random to chase you for a while. And while this is happening, you can hide inside lockers and cabinets if there are any around, but sometimes the Oni will find you when you're in there. Mm-hmm. So you basically have to outrun it, which can be hard because the Oni is just as fast as you are. And you're using a virtual joystick to play with, which means there's a little bit of lag rather than seamless movement. So it actually makes it kind of difficult. So the number one complaint, there's a lot of people who actually really dig this game, but their number one complaint is about the controls. This game is still being updated and worked on to this day, however, so who knows? They may fix it at some point. Anyway, the blessing, though, is that you can save pretty much anywhere, and I would recommend doing so because you never know when the Oni is going to show up. Like, you're in the middle of working on a puzzle, you get out of that menu, and all of a sudden there goes the screeching strings, and then suddenly here's the Oni following you, and you're like, oh, fuck. And it just eats you because you're in a corner or something, you know, like, damn.
This sounds terrible.
It's hard, but it's also, like, weirdly interesting at the same time. The translation is kind of rough. It's not as bad as other games I've seen out there, but there's definitely grammatical errors and things. Right now, there's only one character's available pathline, Hiroshi, the current main character. But eventually, you're supposed to be able to play as any of the characters in the scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
It's apparently a fairly short game, although I haven't beaten it because, you know, like, there's a certain point where in the middle of the night when I'm playing this game, like, the game doesn't have any music. It just has some sound effects for opening doors and stuff, and then those screeching strings for the Oni. And so, like, that actually caused me to just, like, jump a little bit just because, you know, if I'm playing in bed and I'm zoning out and it's late at night and I'm like, okay, I got a little, you know, escape room puzzle here to get out of this room. And all of a sudden it's like, screech, you know, and then here's this giant blue thing fucking following me around. I'm like, ah, damn it.
If you're trapped in that room, where, like, how does the chase work?
It's not really, like, to get onto the next area, to unlock the next part of the school or whatever, you have to unlock it. You have areas you can go to unless the Oni is coming to you from that direction. So, you know, since it's kind of like randomized, you don't really know where he's going to come from and when. It could be a very long stretch without him showing up at all.
Yeah.
Or it could, you know, be like the worst possible thing. That's why you have to save all the time.
Yeah.
But anyway, like, it's triggered enough interest that in Japan, they have two live-action movies based on this game, which surprised the hell out of me. That's not the thing I expected to see, but they sure do. And the thing that makes me giggle is that the Aoni 2.0 game, the dude looks like a blue toothy Gumby. It's the best.
He looks like a tooth that has a bunch of teeth.
Yeah, he does. I guess he does. He looks like a blue tooth with a bunch of teeth in his mouth and some big old eyeballs.
The Japan. So this is what happens when a country doesn't get the cavity creeps.
So I don't even know, dude. So that's a game I've played a bit of. And it's weird because it's like really, really highly rated. It's not the best game in the world. It's all right. It's serviceable. If you are bored and you want to play something escape roomy or somewhat survival horror-y, this is something you can play.
Yeah, when I say it sounds bad, what I mean is it sounds hostile. Like, it sounds
it's not like white day version of hostile, but it is somewhat hostile, yes.
Yeah. Huh.
So that's what I played. Those things.
IO-Oni too.
Yeah.
Well, how do you all feel about bundling it up?
I feel buttons.
Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in, listening. You're not tuning things in anymore. It is not the 40s. Regardless.
Well, let's not go that far.
in several respects, it is not the 40s. So appreciate you taking the time. You know the usual stuff that you can do. You can leave ratings or reviews, tell your friends, all of that kind of stuff. I'm trying to think, like, I don't really want to do a whole bunch of admin here. I just want you to come back next time. We might be missing a week here later in the month. So the week that follows PRGE, I might not be able to, I will not be able to record. So no episode coming out on the 26th, just giving people fair warning for that, because I will be on a plane when we are recording usually that night. Yes, I am on a plane. Blah. So anyway, I've been Cole Ross. You can follow me at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I'm David Meismith. You can follow me on the level.
And I'm Jala Prendez, also known as Jala-chan in places.
Fantastic. And stick around for some titles.
You say that, but I actually don't have any titles. I was trying to remember what the hell David said about Axe that was terrible. That made me faceplant at the beginning.
I said it was extra large.
Oh, God. So there it goes. I started facepalming again. All right. So there. That's my suggestion.
Okay. I will write down extra large, stylized with a hyphen in the middle of extra.
Yes.
Okay. David?
So I had Batman by Default. That was a white person show.
No.
Looks like an anime. And accessibility, fuck yeah.
So I like the idea of accessibility, fuck yeah. However, we don't want to have a profanity in the title.
Yeah.
Could we just do the, like, exclamation point, number sign, whatever?
Possibly. That might look goofy, though. I might be opposed to that.
Okay.
Yeah. And I feel shitty about this. I have two that I wrote, or that I said, rather. A literal DOS box and an agglomeration of nightmarish geometry. I like extra large.
It made me facepalm twice.
So. That is an endorsement, Jolly. You may not realize it, but it is. So.
I know that people like the fact that I get upset about it. So that's how that's going to be.
Okay.